A good Erev Shabbos. It's great to be here together for what is my favorite 30 minutes of the week. Three ideas, 30 minutes to get us energized and ready for the Parsha. Obviously, I want to thank our sponsors for this morning. The Abramovitz family, who are sponsoring in memory of a dear friend of our communities who was lost tragically young this week, Dana Petrover. Our learning should be an aliyah, an elevation for her soul. Obviously, I would also be remiss this morning if I didn't also dedicate our learning to the memory of those who perished in 9/11. I remember where I was. It was my second day of YU. I had, it was really one of my first times in New York City. I barely even knew what the Trade Center was, what the Twin Towers were. But I got a rude education that morning. And again, I don't think anyone can ever hear the words 9/11 again without remembering where they were and without reliving the trauma of that morning. So again, our learning should be in memory of those people that perished and those who continue to suffer from it to this day as well, the first responders and others. Okay, we have three amazing ideas this morning, three that I'm very, very excited about. The first one, we're going to start with a little Hasidish idea from the Mor Vashemesh. The Mor Vashemesh quotes a pasuk at the beginning of the parsha, at the end of the first aliyah, which is a very famous pasuk, which says, Hanistaros Ladonai Eloheinu, Vehaniglos lanu ulvanenu ad olam, which is a nice way of saying hanistaros l'Hashem l'keinu. In other words, God knows what happens behind the scenes, right, when the door is closed and when no one else is paying attention. But vehaniglos, those which we do in the outside, those which people are seeing publicly, lanu ulvanenu ad olam. So that is for eternity. That is for everyone to see. And again, the Meforshim, Rashi, others over there already comment that what are we talking about here? We're talking about accountability. In other words, I can't be accountable for what you do in private. You do something in private, you make a bad mistake, you make a wrong decision, that's on you. But you do something in public, now I am obligated. And because of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zev HaZeh, because we are all interconnected, and we are all obligated to take care of one another, Haniglos, that which happens in public sphere, that which I see and that which I am aware of, I bear responsibility even for your actions. Because what am I supposed to do? I am supposed to correct you. I'm supposed to admonish you. I'm supposed to inspire you to be better. That is the classic interpretation of this pasuk. But the Mor Vashemesh gives a different understanding, which I found quite profound. And I'll say more food for thought than anything else. He writes, Hanistaros l'Adonai Eloheinu. In other words, ultimately, our Judaism is defined by what's in our heart. Right? In other words, Rachmana libabai. Hashem wants us to have our full emotion, our full kavana into it. And so when I step 3 feet into Shmon Esrei, there's only one person in the world who knows whether I'm thinking about the Celtics game tonight or whether I'm thinking about something more important, and that's Hashem. Everyone else just sees the external action. Hanistaros, that which I do in private, in other words, the way I conduct myself, that's to Hashem in my machshava, my mind, my heart. Those are things that only Hashem can tell. And so only Hashem will know if when I'm giving tzedakah, I'm doing it because I want honor or I'm doing it for the right reason. Only Hashem can see that. That's the nistarot. Says the Mor Vashemesh though. But if you want to make an impact on children and grandchildren and everyone around you, then you have to realize that v'hadniglos lanu ulvanenu ad olam. That the way to create that continuity is by specifically doing these actions publicly. Specifically doing things in a way that people know what your values are. That people know definitively what it is that you stand for. And so says the Mor Vashemesh, Hanistaros l'Adonai Eloheinu, Perush, Avdus Hashem roi shetia behester shu machshava. 100%. You and I need a core of greatness, a core of connection to Hashem. And our life can't just be externalities. We need to know deep down inside why we're doing it and the reason why we're doing it, and that we're doing it for the right purpose. But, v'haniglos, but you also have to do things externally. You have to communicate those values both by word and by deed if you want it to be lanu ulvanenu ad holam. If you want your children to learn those messages, your children cannot read your mind. Your children, in all likelihood, are not prophets, and they can't surmise what are your values and what are not your values. God can know what's in your heart. Hashem can know what's in your mind. But your children, your grandchildren, your neighbors, the people in your sphere of influence, they can't know that about you. They can only see the actions that you do externally. And so encourages the Mor Vashemesh that if you want to properly give over values to the next generation, If you want your children and your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren or your neighbor's friends to know definitively what it is that you stand for, don't keep it to yourself. You have to be willing to sing it loud and proud. You have to act a certain way and behave a certain way and speak a certain way in a definitive way that says, this is who I am and this is who I stand for. I believe that is the understanding of a pasuk that we say throughout the month of Elul, where we say, Achat sha'alti meis Hashem osa avakesh. Right? God says you could have anything in the world. Right? You think the genie in the bottle. What was that TV show, girl? I Dream of Genie, right? Dreaming genie in a bottle. You could have whatever it is you want. You know what Hashem says? Achat sha'alti, David HaMelech says, I only want one thing. Why does David HaMelech only choose one thing? Why doesn't he choose 3, 4, 5, 6, 10 things? The answer is because if you try to communicate 10 things, you know what happens? In a year, out the other, it all gets watered down. Right? I'm reading a book now, which is a fantastic book, and I don't mean to take anything away from it. But part of what I'm struggling from the book is that it's too concentrated with goodness. In other words, every 3 pages, I need to take a deep breath, and I'm like, oh my God, I have to remember that, and I have to remember that. It's almost overwhelming. It's sometimes a little bit easier when it's achat sha'alti. This is who I am. This is what I stand for. This is what I believe in. This is what I want to communicate to the next generation, David HaMelech says. I'm not going to overwhelm you. I'm not going to tell you 30,000 things that are important to me. Achat sha'alti. You don't want to know what I stand for, David HaMelech says. Shifti b'veis Hashem, lachsos b'noam Hashem, ulevakir b'chalo. David HaMelech says, I just want a relationship with Hashem. Everything else is secondary. I think that that's what the Mor of Hashemesh is talking about right here in our Parsha. Hanistaros l'adonai Eloheinu. Yeah, Hashem can read your mind. And Hashem knows if you had good intentions. And Hashem knows if you're trying to do the right thing. And Hashem knows what you're thinking, 100%. But if you want lanu ulvanenu ad ha'olam, if you want to make an impact on people that is going to continue for perpetuity, that's going to continue for generations, if you want your children to really know what's important to you, you know what you have to do? You have to tell them. You have to communicate it to them. You can't assume that they're going to know what's important to you. You have to let them know what is important to you. You can't assume they know what you value. You have to tell them over and over and over again what they value. I give my father, I give my mother also, but both my parents a lot of credit. We had a code word in our house growing up where my father would sometimes look at us and say, never forget you're a Moskowitz. That was the line in our house, right? Never forget you're a Moskowitz. And that was my father's nice way of communicating that we stand for a certain set of values, that your name represents a certain way of life, a certain set of ethics and morals and conduct. Never forget you're a Moskowitz. And I knew, and all my siblings knew exactly what that meant. That meant that we had to behave in a certain way. And I can narrow it down to 2 or 3 values, which were so core and so central and so gone over and over and over again in our house, that was ingrained and embedded into every single one of us, that it was unambiguous what the values of our house are. And so the Mor of Hashemesh encourages you, whether you're a grandparent on this call, or a great-grandparent, or a parent, or whether you're single and you're going to be a parent one day, please God. The Mor of Hashemesh, or you're not, and you just have friends and neighbors and other people in your life. The Mor of Hashemesh says, don't assume people know what you stand for. Don't assume people know what your values are. Make sure you tell it to them over and over and over again. Make sure you live your life in a way over and over and over again that people know without a shemitz of a doubt, without even a remote amount of doubt, who you are and what your values are and what you stand for. Yes, you can do things internally, but if you want it to be lanu ulevanenu ad olam, if you want your children to replicate it, then it has to be v'haniglos. It has to be nigla. You have to tell them about it. You have to act upon it. You have to be not afraid to talk about it. Talk about your struggles. Talk about your successes. Talk about your dreams. Talk about your aspirations. If you don't talk about it, then there's no way your children are going to know that it means something to you. Don't make assumptions, especially in this world where I got news for all of us. We are simply partners in a world of people educating our children. The internet is educating our children. Our teachers are educating our children. Social media is educating our children. And we are part of that pie that's getting a smaller and smaller slice of the opportunity to educate our children. They know what those other values are. If you're not telling them what yours are, don't assume that they are going to understand it. Don't assume that they are going to get it. That says the Mor of Hashemesh is v'hanistaros l'Adonai Eloheinu. Yes, 100%, have a good heart and thoughts, beautiful. But v'haniglos, sometimes you have to make that nigla. You have to be willing to tell people about it. Lanu levanenu ad olam, and with that, the Torah gives us a bracha that those values and those ethics shouldn't just exist in your heart, but they should continue in perpetuity for eternity, for long and long periods of time. Okay, that was idea number one. Idea number two comes from Shalom Shwadron, the great Magid of Yerushalayim. Our Ger Shwadron, those who know, is a descendant of Rav Shalom Shwadron. I forgot the exact correlation, the exact relationship. But Rav Shalom Shwadron makes an comment which blew my mind away. And his comment is about influence. Don't assume you are not influenced by your surroundings. Of course you and I are influenced by our surroundings. And says Rav Shalom Shwadron, I'm going to prove to you just how influenced we are by our surroundings based on a pasuk in this week's parsha. That the pasuk says, Ki atem yidatem, eis asher yashavnu be'eretz Mitzrayim. Moshe is warning the Jewish people, right? You remember what it was like in Mitzrayim. Veis asher avarnu bekerav hagoyim asher avartem, vatiru eshikutzehem veskulehem. Torah starts off by telling the Jewish people, you remember what it was like to be in Egypt. You remember what it was like to be in a foreign land amongst a value system which was antithetical to your value system. And what does the Torah call the Egyptian value system? Vatir'u, and you saw, es shikutzehem, their like disgustingness, ve'es gilulehem, and their idolatry. In other words, it was unambiguous that they were wrong and you were right in Mitzrayim. There was no doubt that when you were in Mitzrayim, you were seeing a decrepit, immoral society, right? Ki atem yidatem, Hashem says. You knew that when you were in Mitzrayim, and you were amongst the nations of the world, vatiru eshikutzehem veskulehem, you were seeing something that was wrong. You knew that that was not a correct path of behavior, and that you had to choose differently. But then, continue the pasuk. Read on. The pasuk then says, Eitz va'even, kesef v'zahav asher imahem. You saw their eitz va'even, their stones and their trees, kesef v'zahav, their gold and their silver that was amongst them. Says Shalom Shwadron, this pasuk is describing a transformation that takes place when you're in a society for long enough. That what starts off as shikutzehem v'gululehem, what starts off as despicable and something that I don't want a part of and something that's antithetical to my values and something that I know that's wrong, quickly becomes Eitz Va'Even. Eitz Va'Even, there's nothing inherently wrong with. Right? It could be bad, it could be good. Ah, it's a tree, it's a rock, okay. It might not be bad, but I don't have to run away from it. Right? It's neutral. Eitz Va'Even. So what started off as something that was egregious and horrific and disgusting is now Eitz Va'Even. Now all of a sudden it's not so bad. Now all of a sudden it's pretty innocuous. And what happens next? Kesef v'zahav asher imahem. What started off as disgusting, then became neutral, parav, and now it became kesef v'zahav. Now it became something that they're chasing after, something that they're desirous of, something that they're trying to emulate. This is who they want to become. Says Rav Shwadron, this is the danger in being around people and in a society that is antithetical to who you are and what you believe in. That what starts off as, disgusting, America, we don't need this, this is not our values, all of a sudden becomes, okay, it's parv. It's neither here nor there. It's neither good nor bad or ugly. What's the big deal, right? In other words, I can be on the, I'm cruising, right? I might not be growing in it, but I'm also not succumbing to the dangers of it. All of a sudden becomes kesef v'zahava shiri mahem. All of a sudden, that becomes gold and silver. That becomes something that we want. That becomes something that we are chasing after. Says Rav Shwadron, that is the danger that every single one of us has on a macro level and a micro level. On a macro level, it means that the more we are exposed to society and the world and social media, the more of a danger it becomes, right? Think about the frog in the boiling water analogy, right? You put a frog in boiling water, it's going to jump right out. You put a frog in hot water that's not boiling and you leave it there for a long period of time, eventually it dies. Why? Because it gets used to it. Because it gets used to it. Says Rav Shwadron, that's exactly the danger that Hashem is describing in our Parsha. We started off in Mitzrayim, it was disgusting. Shikutzehem v'gulehem. Then as we stayed there longer, it was Eitz Va'Even. It was trees and stones. It wasn't so bad. It was innocuous, neither here nor there. And then before you knew it, it was Kesef Zahav. We were looking at their lifestyle. We were looking at their values. We were looking at their priorities. And we're saying, ah, this is something that I want. This is something that I'm chasing after. Says Rav Shradron, that is the danger on a macro level anytime you're in a situation like this. But he also says it's on a micro level. It's on a micro level based on who you choose to be in your social circles, who you choose to surround yourself with, right? We always talk about it in the context of our children, right? When your children go to school, you always talk to them about choosing the right friends and choosing people that are going to be good and positive influences on them. But as we grow older, we kind of just fall into these social circles where it's convenient or, you know, whatever, we're friends based on whatever circumstances. But we also have to wonder, are my friends lifting me up or are they pulling me down? Are they a good influence on me or are they a negative influence on me? Because the longer I'm in that social circle, it's just going to become normal. What's going to start as shikutzehem v'gululehem, selling that out, we don't do that. It's all of a sudden going to be like, okay, it's eight for Evan. I'm not doing it, but I'm also not speaking out against it. And then all of a sudden it's going to be kesef azab. That's going to be what I'm chasing after. That's what's going to be what is my ideals and what my new priorities are. Shradron points out that this is the continuation of the pasuk. It says, "Pen yesh bachem ish o isha." It starts off as a man or a woman. In other words, it's one individual. One individual can expose people to a certain ideal or a certain set of values or a certain set of priorities. And then what's the next word after that? O mishpacha. What started off as one person then became an entire family. O shevet. And then it became the entire tribe. In other words, don't think that it's just one person. Don't think that it's just one. No. That infiltrates. It penetrates into everything else. And it slowly but surely impacts everyone else around it. So says Rosh Hashanah, this pasuk is a reminder to us about just how critical the people we surround ourselves with are in our development as religious Jews. If you surround yourself with people that are antithetical to your priorities and ideals, says Rosh Hashanah, I got news for you. That's going to be who you become. Whether you realize it or not, and it might happen slowly over time, but if you surround yourself with people that are bad influences, if you allow yourself to surround yourself with people that bring you down rather than pick you up, people that make fun of spiritual growth, why do you go to that class? Why do you do this? What are you so from now, right? That's not the people that are going to bring you up. And so says Rosh Hashanah, what we're discussing here is a progression, a slow progression of just how significant and important our surroundings are in our growth, or in our decline. So idea number one was the beautiful idea from the Ma'or of HaShemesh, V'haniglos lanu levaninu adolam. We have to be willing to speak about our priorities. We have to be willing to share our priorities. We can't just keep them to ourselves. We want them to be lanu levaninu adolam. If we want our children to know what we stand for, you got to tell them. Sit down at the dinner table tonight. When your children or your grandchildren call you Erev Shabbos, say, I want you to know what's so important to me. Right, I want you to know what is so critically important to me. One or two things that are the non-negotiables in my life. That when I die and they're speaking about me at my eulogy, I want everyone to know this was Philip Moskowitz. This is what he stood for. This is what was important to him and everything else was secondary. That was idea number one. Idea number two is Rav Shradron. It's a beautiful idea. A little bit hard to think about, but I think important nonetheless, which is the slippery slope. The domino effect that every single one of us are on when we're talking about spirituality. That what could start off as shikutzehem v'gululehem, something that's disgusting and despicable and that I want to stay away from, if you allow yourself to be exposed to it over a considerable amount of time, all of a sudden it's not so bad. All of a sudden it's not so bad. And I can give lots of examples. I don't want to go too in depth. I'll let everyone apply that to their own life. But I could think of lots of examples. I'll give one example. I'll give one example. Let's take TV, okay? I remember when I grew up, right? Shows that my parents wouldn't allow me to watch would be the most innocuous shows on TV right now, right? What's normal to watch, right? I can't even go on Netflix anymore because just seeing things that would have been incomprehensible 20, 30 years ago, that in no one's wildest imaginations or dreams would have been on mainstream TV or nowadays is regular. Nowadays, it's just like, yeah, okay, that's what it is, right? There are TV shows that display things that are overtly against halacha, But like, okay, that's what's on TV. The point is our sensitivities become so numb. We become so used to it. That's what society has embraced, that you and I just fall prey to it. But says Rosh Hashanah Shadron, we have to be very careful about our surroundings, not to all of a sudden let shikutzehem vegululehem, that which at once was wrong, at once was immoral, all of a sudden to be kesef is ahav, something that's not only neutral and innocuous, but something that people are chasing after and that people are celebrating. That was idea number two. Idea number three is a little bit more upbeat than idea number two. And that comes from the beautiful, magnificent pasuk in the parsha of Atta, Kisvu lachem es ha-shira azos. The Torah is compared to a shira. Torah is compared to a song. Why, out of all descriptions, is the Torah compared to a song? Now, I know Rabbi Goldberg addressed this question in his Parsha class this week. I don't know what his answer was, so I'm assuming I'm going to give a little bit of a different answer. But why is the Torah compared to a song? Why is the Torah compared to a song? So I want to share with you from the introduction to his commentary on Choshen Mishpat, from the Aruch HaShulchan, Rabbi Yechiel Michal Epstein. And he offers something that is, to me, one of the most magnificent descriptions of what it means for Torah to be a song. He writes the following: V'chol machloket hatanaim ve'amoraim. All of the disputes amongst the great rabbis in history, and there have been some really fierce disputes amongst the rabbis in history. In other words, not like fights like, oh, you scratched my car. Like real fights, right? I think Torah should be understood one way, you think it should be understood the other way. L'shem shamayim. Right? Divrei Elokim Chaim. We're both right. It's the milchamta shel Torah. So what is it? Hema v'lekulam yesh panu ba'alacha. Says Rav Epstein, they are all critically important to the evolution of alacha. V'adarabah. Listen to these words. Not only they are important. Zos hi hatiferes l'torah senu akdosha. That is what makes Torah so special. The fact that there is machlokes, the fact that there are disagreements and arguments over how to apply halacha and how to interpret halacha, he says that's not just like, oh, okay, we'll tolerate that in halacha. He says, zos hi tiferes Torah seinu. That is the beauty of our Torah. Why? He says, v'chol ha-Torah nikra shira. Torah is compared to a song. V'tiferes hashir here. What makes song so beautiful? K'she hakolos mishunim ze mize. When the voices are different one from another, v'zehu ikar hani'imos. That is the sweetness of song. You and I don't have to be groisome musicians to know that when you're listening to certainly orchestral music, when you're listening to a cappella music, if everyone is singing on the exact same note, in the exact same key, the exact same way, it's not so beautiful. What makes a cappella so beautiful, what makes an orchestra so beautiful, is that some are singing a little high, some are singing a little bit low. Some might be in this key, some might be in that key. Some might be playing this instrument, and some might be playing that instrument. They're going to sound very different, but when they're put together and blended together, there's this harmony to it, right? That's what makes song beautiful. I was listening to my children the other day with the Boston Pops. They were for some reason enthralled with the 4th of July and how they timed the cannons with the Boston Pops and Tchaikovsky 1812 Overture. I don't need to bore you, but right? But one of the things that my kids were mesmerized by is how different instruments knew to key in at different times and how when you put it all together, that's what makes the magnificence of the orchestra as a whole. Says Rav Epstein, take that imagery of music and simply apply it to Torah. Torah would not be beautiful, it would not be a song if all of us were uniform. If all of us believed the same way, practiced the same way, thought the same way, interpreted the Torah the same way. That would be robotic, says Rav Epstein. What makes Torah a song is that you might sing high and I might sing low. Is that your voice might sound one way and my voice might sound a different way. According to the Aruch HaShulchan, it is specifically the heterogeneity of learning Torah that makes it so sweet and so beautiful. And so instead of shying away from the machloket, again, l'shem shamayim, it's dafka, it's specifically the diversity of opinions that makes Torah so beautifully. It's the diversity of opinions that makes it so sweet sounding and that give it this title of shira. Says Rav Epstein, v'zehu ikar hani'imot, ni'im, na'im, right? Sweetness. that the essence of what makes Torah so sweet is dafka the fact that we are all different. It's dafka the fact that we are heterogeneous. It is dafka the fact that we are not one and the same, that we sing a little bit differently, that we relate to Torah a little bit differently. That's what makes Torah so beautiful. And so he says, you want to know why the Torah compares it to a song? Specifically to encourage that diversity. Specifically to encourage the machlokes l'shem shamayim, the difference of opinions and the difference of approaches and the difference of beliefs, again, all within the mainstream approach of Torah, within the context of halacha, obviously. But that is what makes Torah so sweet. That is what makes it a song. And so we saw three ideas in a little bit less than 30 minutes this week. But idea number one was the beautiful idea from the Maor of HaShemesh. V'haniglos lanu l'vaneinu ad olam. That yes, I can feel certain things in my heart. And I might not be a public person. I might even be an introvert. And I might even find it hard to speak about these things. But if you don't get comfortable speaking about emuna, about Hashem, about your values, about what's important to you, if you don't act that way and speak that way and communicate that way, don't assume your children or grandchildren are going to know what you stand for. There can be no assumptions in this world, as I said, where you are simply a minority partner in the education of your children because of the influences that they're receiving all around you. That was idea number one, beautiful idea from the Maor of HaShemesh. Idea number two was this beautiful idea from Rav Shalom Shadron. The slippery slope of spirituality, that what 30 years ago would have been unheard of and horrific and like no one in their wildest dreams would have ever imagined would have appeared on TV, is now Maisim B'chol Yom. It is every single day. We can never allow our sensitivities to become dulled. We can never allow our sensitivities that these things that are, again, antithetical to halacha, to become normalized behavior. We simply can't allow that to happen. We have to be vigilant and diligent, especially as we educate children and grandchildren in such a complicated world, that influences that we allow into our house, influences that we allow into our lives, even though they might seem innocuous at first, and even though they might seem like they're irrelevant at first, quickly becomes kesef zahav, it becomes the ideal and our priority. We have to be very careful about those slippery slopes in religious growth. And lastly, the beautiful idea, magnificent idea, from Rabbi Yechiel Michal Epstein, the author of the Aruch HaShulchan, in his introduction to the Choshen Mishpat, where he says that you want to know why Torah is compared to a song? Because just as song becomes beautiful because of the diversity of voices, so too Torah is beautiful because of the diversity of voices. It's specifically the fact that you and I are different. It's specifically the fact that you and I approach Judaism differently and our neshamas approach Judaism differently. That is what makes it so sweet. That is what truly makes Torah a song. And so again, I want to thank the Abramovitz for sponsoring, in memory of Dana, our learning should be an aliyah for neshama. Our, it should also be an aliyah for the neshama of all those who perished in 9/11. And in the zchus of our learning, we should go into Shabbos on fire, getting ready for Elul. This Motzei Shabbos, we start saying slichos. This is crunch time. This is when we have to kick it into high gear. In Be'ezras Hashem, next week, we will be sharing some Divrei Torah Erev Rosh Hashanah, if I'm still standing. And we should go into Rosh Hashanah feeling great about ourselves, about our relationship with Hashem, about the work that we put in to make our Rosh Hashanahs meaningful. And with that, I wish everyone a beautiful and meaningful and inspirational Shabbos.